dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright. Instead of asking how much of your time is left, ask them how much of your mind, baby. Cause in this life, things are much harder than in the afterworld. In this life, you're on your own. And if the elevator tries to break you down,
this is Ken Stringfellow of the Posies, Big Star, etc., and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Anderson of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC Daily News for Monday, May 8th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul's office released a report on May 5th showing how African Americans, women, and the disabled have it worse in New York's housing market. The Fair Housing Matters NY report found that a third of New Yorkers are living in segregated counties, and 95% of Black and African American residents in the state are living in a county that is highly segregated from white households. Only a third of Black and African American households own their own home, and only 25% of Hispanic and Latino households do, while overall two-thirds of New York households own their own homes. The report also found that women and children were more likely to have higher rates of poverty, and households with a disabled member are more likely to be classified as low income. Hochul said, quote, "The findings in this report show that confronting these inequalities will require an aggressive, multifaceted approach. I look forward to working with our partners at the federal, state, and local levels to take the bold actions necessary to foster more diverse communities and create and preserve affordable housing for more New Yorkers," unquote. Hochul's housing plan of building 800,000 new units was shot down in the state budget by Democrats in the legislature. Hochul and many officials in the Hudson Valley have identified an affordable housing crisis in the state. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. The Troy Record reports that New York Senator Chuck Schumer said that a proposed rules change for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services could bring an estimated annual nearly $1 billion to upstate New York hospitals. Schumer said, quote, "For far too long, Upstate New York hospitals have faced unfairly low Medicare payments that fell terribly short of wage demands, leaving hospitals struggling to compete to bring the best doctors and nurses to upstate New York. After years of fighting, though, the feds have finally shifted course and proposed a new rule that can finally rectify the unfair payment system and give upstate New York the shot in the arm it has long needed to the tune of nearly $1 billion every single year, unquote. There have been numerous cutbacks at New York hospitals in recent years. Columbia Memorial in Hudson, for instance, no longer has birthing services for mothers. Schumer says that the proposed rule change would bring more than $967 million in increased federal funding for hospital systems across upstate New York. Since the 1980s, hospitals in the Albany area have only received 86% of what the average hospital gets to account for wages. Columbia Memorial would get an extra $8,228,068 if the proposed rule change goes through. Read more about this story in the Troy Record. Sarah Rizzo reports for News 10 in Albany that Massachusetts has begun a redesign of the viewing area and parking lot at Bashbish Falls, permanently blocking access to water at the bottom of the falls. The highest waterfall in Massachusetts was a popular destination during the COVID-19 pandemic, with visitors leaving lots of trash and swimming and picnicking where that is not allowed. The Massachusetts Department of Conservation and Recreation said in a statement, quote, to promote public safety, mitigate visitor impacts on the natural resource, and protect the rare and native habitat, access to the water was closed in July 2020 with the placement of barriers, unquote. The redesign will replace those barriers with more permanent barriers, but the DCR does not know when the work will be complete. Bashbish Falls is along the Massachusetts border and can be accessed from Copake in Columbia County, too. Copake town historian Howard Blue says Bashbish Falls is the town's biggest attraction. Read more about this story at News 10 in Albany. And WNYT reports that with several more mass shootings across the country this past week, the Grace Baptist Church of Troy announced it will raffle off an AR-15 gun or a flamethrower in July. The church announced the giveaway in a Facebook post. The church will give away the gun over the July 4th weekend. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was not amused by the announcement, saying,
well, I believe that AR-15s should be banned. I don't think they should be publicly available to civilians. It is a military-style weapon designed to kill large numbers of people very quickly, and not designed for hunting, not designed for enthusiasts. They're designed for war. So I think that's wrong. And as a person of faith, it's very disturbing to me personally that a church would be giving away weapons of war designed to kill large numbers of people very quickly.
Read more about this story at the WNYT website. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, May 8th. We are 35% of the way through the year with 44 days left until summer. Local early morning temperatures range from 45 degrees in Tannersville to 55 in Voorheesville. Everyone else, including Columbia County, is in that range. Regional average soil temperature is 54 healthy degrees. Pollen levels are, however, bad, with trees and grasses duking it out for first place. A lot of people are going to wake up to some wet ground as rain fell over most of the region last night. We're going to need that water because this week is going to be dry and sunny, so get those watering hoses ready. Today, temperatures hit 71 degrees at 3 p.m. Sun and winds cancel each other out, making conditions comfortable. Overnight, temperatures fall to 44 degrees. Tomorrow, little more cloudy, little less windy, still comfy with a high of 67 at 4 p.m. 42 degrees overnight takes us into a super sunny Wednesday with a high of 70 degrees. UV exposure levels are going up, so be prepared for the extra photons. Thursday, the mercury floats on up to 77 degrees. Speaking of fun in the sun, today's tide schedule is high at 5:07 a.m., low at 12:21 p.m., high again at 5:48 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 55 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 6:46 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 4:38 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 15%. Minor geomagnetic disturbances are expected as a gently passing CME flies past our rock today. Another one comes on Wednesday. Solar wind speed is currently 484 kilometers per second at 8.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4.6, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 99. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Support comes from support for
United Airlines. United provides
support for NPR
in cities like Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Underwriting today is provided
United Airlines,
by Borders, Books, and Music, Jutus, Juice Bar Blend, and by Whitney Farms, producers of a complete line of
public
radio.com.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising. National Public Radio.
National
Business Radio
comes from
United Airlines,
Borders, Books, and Music,
Jutus, Juice Bar Blend.
United provides just another way. National Business Radio is rising.
Public Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.
.com.
Public Radio.
Nonstop Business.
Underwriting today is provided by Inktomi and Syncomi Scaling.
National Public Radio.
And inktomi.com.
National Public Radio.
National Public Radio.
Nonstop Business
Radio. .com.
Public
Radio.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio. .com.
Public Radio.
Soil Amendments and Mulches. .com.
National Public Radio. Nonstop Business
Radio.
Public Radio.
Well, lots of pretty good news there. Thanks, Joe. That report brought to you by
National Business Radio.
.com.
Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
Hi, I'm Jean Thomas.
And welcome to another edition of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We have an exciting guest today, one of our favorite people, right? Joe Bain from Bain's Best Perennials.
He's a wholesale grower, so you can't go to his place, but you can go to any of the retailers that he supplies.
And it's the perfect time of year because it's officially spring, right?
Yay.
It's officially spring. So we're really going to start thinking about planting perennials. Yeah, Joe is really a perennial expert, so we're going to talk to him all about his favorites and how he grows them and what's really a durable perennial and native perennials and all of that good stuff.
Joe knows more than anybody I know about perennials. In fact, he's even taught some of the Master Gardener classes and is always very generous to the Master Gardeners. We're here with Joe Bain, owner of Bain's Best Perennials, a wholesale perennial plant nursery in Malden Bridge in Columbia County. Joe's been very generous with the Master Gardener volunteer program over the years. He's taught classes on perennials to the trainees, and he's sold us plants at wholesale prices for our plant sales and even donated plants from time to time. Welcome, Joe. It's a pleasure to spend some time with you. Thanks for coming in to help us learn more about perennials. Let's start with a little history. You started your nursery in Malden Bridge in 1988, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, tell us a little about yourself and the nursery.
Well, thank you for having me. I actually grew up in the agricultural business. My family, George and Louise, and my sister Nancy and I bought a dairy farm in Malden Bridge, which is really where the nursery still exists, back in 1963. So was raised in agriculture and saw everybody get their feet on the floor at 5:30 in the morning to do milking and all that stuff. And so they milked the farm from 63 to July of 69. And they sold the farm off on that side of the street, and we moved over to what would be the eastern side of Route 66, and that's where my nursery is today. But, yeah, so just lots of livestock and agriculture, and then I slid over into the plant business, which is a little bit more easily maintained than livestock.
Why did you choose perennials?
Perennials have always been kind of suited to my personality. Busy in the spring, summer, and the fall, and then completely relaxed for the winter. That lifestyle was kind of my lifestyle. And then as you study plants, trees, shrubs, lichens, whatever it might be, you realize that, oh, these plants are beautiful, and they're completely in sync with my own life.
Yeah. I'm happy it's a beauty thing, Joe, and it's not just about your lifestyle. You would have, like, feet of clay. I would have been upset with you.
It definitely is a beauty thing. There's no question.
But it's a wholesale business. You don't sell retail, right?
Exactly right. We're wholesale, so we're farm to the landscape trade, who then install into homeowners.
So you're usually dealing with landscape designers and people
exactly.
like that?
Exactly, yep. Extensive plant lists. People come and pick up with the trailers and trucks.
So when I come into your nursery, there's so many perennials. How many perennials do you have that you usually grow?
I think right now we're about 480 types, and the normal inventory runs somewhere between 21,000 and 28,000.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it's interesting that the sales and the production basically are almost the same, so that number actually never changes.
Oh.
We don't ever plummet down to real low or extremely high. There's this natural balance that...
But there's times that certain plants are available and certain plants are not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. If we run out of something, many times you can't replace it until, you know, the following year.
And is that because of how do you grow from seed? Do you grow from plugs? Like what's your usual method?
It really depends on the individual plant, but many times there's an ideal starting point for most things and a finishing point, and you really can't change those two things too much. There's a little bit of wiggle room. Other plants you can do 3 or 4 times a year. And just keep recycling them in if they're really fast. Salvias are a really good example. All those salvias, you can do them the last day of March. You can do them every 6 or 8 weeks into pots.
But your heavy planting season is what, like February, March, April?
We plant from probably the last couple of days of March right through October. There's not a week that goes by that we're not.
Do you do more plugs than seed?
So we do plants from our own seed in that one small greenhouse as much as we can. A lot of things come easily from seed. And then everything else that's cuttings we'll purchase, but it comes in as a plug.
Right.
And then also bare roots. Bare roots are tremendous amount.
Yeah.
Springtime.
Yep.
There's a certain point where when you get into the middle or late May, you want to be done with your bare roots, have those in pots. And then we can do bare roots again when we get into September where it cools off a little bit, where they can root in. And have good success that way.
And do you collect your own seed, or do you basically, you're buying seed?
Oh, sure.
Oh,
yeah, some of the fun. There's certain things
great.
You can collect pretty easily from plants that I have at my house, plants at the nursery, plants on the side of the road.
Like what kinds of plants do you collect the seed of?
A bunch of native things.
Coneflowers or?
No, I don't collect any coneflowers. Huh. We purchase all of those because the seed has to be exactly
true seed.
Yeah, there's a whole host of things. Rebecca's asters from the side of the road, Eupatorium, Hyssopifoliums, Heterotheca villosa, which is really hard to find.
What is that? Well,
Heterotheca is actually a golden aster.
Oh, okay.
It grows a good 4.5 feet tall. And
does it look like a goldenrod to the casual eye?
No, it looks like an aster that's completely yellow.
I got to make a note.
About that plant that you planted, you
sold it. Tim got some last time you were there.
It's super rugged, right? It's
super
crazy
rugged, that's right. Yes.
So when I drive along the county roads and I see a crazy person picking seed, that's you, right?
Probably. There's a lot of crazy people
that's
out there.
That's true.
I don't. But in the fall, I do carry a pair of scissors and paper bags in my car.
We do that too.
And notations.
Okay, so now here's the question. Do you keep all your seeds in a candy box or a canning jar? Things like I do.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you know, they get cleaned and sorted, labeled.
Oh, I don't do that part.
And put in the fridge.
Oh, yeah, I do that with a lot of them.
You do need to label them. as to what they are, because you think you'll remember what this is. And so the date you collect it and what it is, that's really all you need.
And how do you even sort through what you're going to plant, what you're going to buy? Like, how do you decide what's on your list?
That's what we do in the middle of the winter. Uh-huh. And of course, over the course of the year, all my landscape customers, gardeners, are coming and going, mm-hmm. and we're having conversations. And many times they'll go like, oh, you need to grow this. Today is really great. I love
fashion.
This plant, and I can't find it. Yes, it's very fashion. So I've learned to take those notes, just really quick, scribble it down, pin it back on the board.
So there's kind of in plants that are in this year?
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. What's the most requested this year? Do you have – I want to know what it
there's
is.
There's a peony I'm listing after.
Yeah. Is there something that people have been going crazy over this year, or just a bunch of different things?
It's a real broad spectrum. Mm. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I have to go to my notes.
Yeah.
Because it's really overwhelming as to how much stuff comes at you.
I know. I've been
time.
Trying to convince Joe to plant more goldenrod, Solidago, and he's just resistant, you know?
Well, I can understand that.
Yeah. It's the mm-hmm. best. It's a great plant.
Has it become a noxious weed in England where they grow it on purpose? It can be really aggressive.
Yeah, there are different types, but I'm going to just defend goldenrod here.
Fine.
There's many, many varieties of it that are great.
Of course, it has to sell. So
right.
You come in
thing,
and buy three pots of something I have 100 of, and then those are the 97 sit and become weedy.
I want to know how you keep everything watered in the summer, because that must be a huge challenge, right?
This last year was super easy because it seemed it rained every third or fourth day. Not so much that it was a real problem, but we have an automatic irrigation system. It's in now three different zones, and it clicks on every other day. Runs from 2 in the morning till 6 in the morning. I get there, I never see it turned on.
Oh, so you don't – I mean, do you hand water as well?
Oh, sure, especially in brand new things.
Oh, the babies.
Absolutely. Yeah, once a baby goes into a pot, you know, and then it's usually on a wagon, so it's got to get watered, and then we park it – off someplace, and they root in 3 or 4 weeks mm-hmm. out there on the wagon, so you have to go back to the wagons because we don't have irrigation out there. And once it's ready, once it's full, then it goes into the nursery. It's kind of a finished product.
So it's the pre-nursery nursery.
There you go. Yeah, kind of. Right. Yeah.
And you probably have more people working with you in the summer than, say, at this time of year, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's here with me now. But springtime, there's 6 or 7 of us, plus mm-hmm. myself. And then in the summer, they kind of all disperse out into other jobs. And I'll usually run the place with just myself and 2 people mm-hmm. each day.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And all the politicians are going to make statements. They're going to offer prayers and condolences. Prayers and condolences won't bring these people back.
Stephen Spanauer witnessed the Saturday shooting at an Allen, Texas outlet mall that left at least 8 dead and 7 wounded. A former police and army officer and self-described gun lover, Spanauer told MSNBC, "We need to take automatic rifles off the streets." Texas Governor Greg Abbott called for addressing mental health issues, which he called the root cause. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas held a press conference at the Mexico border ahead of the end of Title 42. The health policy allows the Border Patrol to turn away migrants for fear of COVID-19, but it's set to end May 11th. Mayorkas warned of what's coming.
I think that there is no question that this is going to be extremely challenging. I do not want to understate the severity of the challenge that we expect to encounter.
Speaking to a women's empowerment nonprofit, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said President Joe Biden doesn't get the credit he deserves, especially on infrastructure funding. Clinton called him disruptive in a good way.
The economic investments that are being made because of President Biden's very singular focus on helping us to have the economy of the future is really disruptive.
Clinton also voiced support for a Supreme Court code of ethics given Justice Clarence Thomas's scandals. According to a new ABC News Washington Post poll, President Joe Biden's approval sank to a new low 2 weeks after he officially said he's running again. The poll shows Biden's job approval is at 36% and disapproval at 56%. Independent Arizona Senator Kristen Sinema has ruled out ruling as a Republican. That could add to a complex picture in a swing state Senate race. Former President Donald Trump's 2022 video deposition in E. Jean Carroll's lawsuit was released Friday. In the nearly hour-long video, Trump denies Carroll's accusation that he raped her in the mid-90s.
I still don't know this woman. I think she's a whack job. I have no idea. I don't know anything about this woman other than what I read in stories and what I hear.
Finally, former Attorney General Bill Barr looked back at working for the Trump administration while discussing his new book in Cleveland. Trump is officially running again, but Barr says he lacks the discipline to deliver on his policies and would only bring chaos back to the Oval Office.
You may want his policies, but Trump will not deliver Trump policies. He will deliver chaos and, if anything, lead to a backlash.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our HRS indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz signed the Democracy for the People Act Friday, a huge bill expanding voter registration and mail-in voting options, creating a small donor campaign funding voucher system, and enhancing penalties for intimidation or harassment of voters or election officials. Minnesota joins New Mexico in passing omnibus bills to strengthen democracy protections in 2023. Minnesota's bill establishes an automatic voter registration system, registering voters at the State Departments of Public Safety and Human Services unless they opt out. This includes pre-registration of 16 and 17-year-olds, though they can't vote until age 18. The bill is expected to add 450,000 voters to the rolls each year in a state which has one of the highest voter turnouts in the country. The Democracy for the People Act also creates a permanent absentee voter vote-by-mail list, particularly helpful for seniors and the disabled, and makes voting materials more available in other languages. Steps were also taken to rein in big money influence in elections by establishing a new Democracy Dollars campaign funding system, where qualifying candidates need to reach out to voters to receive the two $25 small donor certificates given to each registered voter. Its aim is to keep candidates responsive to the voters, not special interest campaign donors. We have the text to the bill, analysis articles, and lots more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
WRGB in Albany reports that Representative Paul Tonko held a listening session April 29th in the town of Milton in Saratoga County. Tonko wanted to hear residents' opinions on the new farm bill that is being negotiated this year. But the story does not quote any residents or their opinions, only Tonko. The 20th Congressional District Representative said, and I quote, "Food insecurity, the need to have food on the table, the importances of nutrition for our senior community and for sound development for our young people. So we need to emphasize this, especially because there were proposed restrictions and rollbacks in the bill recently done on the House floor in Washington. So it just alerts me to the wrongdoing in that bill and how it relates to agriculture and nutrition," end quote. Read more about this story at the WRGB website.
On April 27th, Democrat Pat Ryan voted with local Republicans Mark Molinaro and Elise Stefanik against, quote, "directing the president to remove all United States armed forces other than the United States armed forces assigned to protect the United States embassy from Somalia," unquote. Democrat Paul Tonko voted for the measure, which failed 102 to 321 in the House of Representatives. It was a rare bipartisan vote in Congress, with 52 Republicans and 50 Democrats voting for the measure, and 165 Republicans and 156 Democrats voting against.
Nancy Kern reports in Columbia Green Media that Representative Mark Molinaro, a Republican from Dutchess County, on April 29th voted against a bill to end a two-year moratorium on duties placed on imported cells and modules used on solar farms. Most Republicans voted for the bill, but it will not pass the Democrat-controlled Senate nor be signed by President Joe Biden. And it passed 221 to 202, which means Molinaro breaking with his party did not jeopardize the bill passing in the House of Representatives. Even though the vote was mostly theater, Molinaro said, and I quote, "repealing this moratorium could force domestic companies, including those in New York's 19th congressional district, to pay over $1 billion in retroactive duties, eliminate thousands of domestic jobs, and cancel planned solar projects. I broke with my own party and voted against today's legislation because it would kneecap our advances in domestic solar energy and eliminate jobs in upstate New York. End quote. Judging from comments included in the story, Molinaro's vote won't be popular with local Republicans who seem opposed to solar power. Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger, a Republican, said, and I quote, "I do not agree that it's used as a utility scale. I don't think that's the optimal use for solar," end quote. Athens Sound Supervisor Michael Perrone said, and I quote, "I don't think I agree entirely with Molinaro because there may be a pilot involved with the project, which means that on a town level, the town does not get full taxation," end quote. Republican County Legislator Thomas Hobart from Coxsackie said, and I quote, "I don't see the residents of the region benefiting from the power that would be generated and would only experience the loss of open space," end quote. Molinaro represents the 19th Congressional District, though he lives in the 18th Congressional District. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. The Troy Record reports that Representative Paul Tonko introduced the New York-New Jersey Watershed Protection Act with New York Republican Representative Nicole Malliotakis to protect the Hudson, Mohawk, and Raritan Rivers and their tributaries. In the Senate, all four New York and New Jersey Senators, Kirsten Gillibrand, Chuck Schumer, Cory Booker, and Bob Menendez, introduced the bill. Tonko said, and I quote, "For too long, our New York-New Jersey watershed has been grossly underfunded despite being America's most polluted watershed. I've long pushed to support this critical waterway, driving forward federal restoration efforts that will have massive ripple effects, including protecting communities from flood risks, supporting local wildlife, improving water quality, and driving economic growth," end quote. The bill would attempt to coordinate restoration efforts of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, improve water quality, increase public access to the watershed, mitigate flood risk, and provide $20 million annually for watershed restoration grants through fiscal year 2029. Read more about this story in the Troy Record.
Spectrum News reports that President Joe Biden will give a speech on the debt ceiling impasse in Congress on May 10th in the Hudson Valley. Biden seems to be targeting New York Republicans to persuade them to avoid default without conditions. Typically, Congress votes to raise the debt ceiling without limitations, but Republicans control the House of Representatives, but not the Senate and the presidency. They have been unable to pass any legislation, so they are holding the debt ceiling hostage to get some legislative measures they would like passed. Local Republican Representative Mark Molinaro, who lives in the 18th Congressional District but represents the 19th District, tried to persuade voters otherwise, releasing a statement that said, quote, "President Biden plans to leave negotiators behind in Washington and travel to the Hudson Valley to make a political speech," unquote. Read more about this story at Spectrum News. This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
Do you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, 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 really boring.
It would be about wonderful things. It would be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
Awesome.
All the way down.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear.
Burn his...
I turned it down. Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
On Thursday, May 11th, turn out for a public information session for WGXC Community Contributors Program. If you want to be on the radio at WGXC, now is your chance. Turn out at 6 p.m. Thursday, May 11th at the Kinderhook Memorial Library for an information session and a chance to find out how to get on the air at 90.7 FM. The WGXC Community Contributors Program is created to bolster Wavefarm's mission of participatory radio. We're looking for volunteer producers, programmers, sponsors, and more to make segments to air in the primetime drive time hours on the station. It features reviews, stories, and more. If you'd like to interview local farmers or do restaurant reviews or have another idea for a short segment on the radio, please get in touch at content@wgxc.org or turn out May 11th at 6 p.m. at the Kinderhook Memorial Library for a public information session about the WGXC Community Contributors Program. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Last week, Richard Christ of Nassau, New York, James R. Gordon of North Greenbush, and Leslie Wallace of Troy were arrested and arraigned on an indictment charging them with conspiring to violate the rights of Rensselaer County voters in connection with elections held in 2021. Christ is the director of operations for Rensselaer County, Gordon is the director of the Bureau for Central Services, and Wallace works for the Rensselaer County Executive's Office. In the indictment, the FBI alleges that during local elections held in 2021, Christ, Gordon, and Wallace conspired to use their official positions and actual and apparent authority over Rensselaer County employees to obtain absentee ballots in voters' names through fraud and intimidation. These voters did not intend to request absentee ballots, nor did they seek voting assistance from Christ, Gordon, or Wallace. The three indictees then conspired to cast false and illegal votes in these voters' names in the primary and general elections held in Rensselaer County in 2021. Their conduct violated the constitutional rights of Rensselaer County voters to have their votes counted equally as compared to votes cast by other voters, and made it more likely that the defendants' preferred candidates would win the elections. In the last year, Rensselaer County Election Commissioner James Schofield resigned as election chair before pleading guilty to similar voter fraud charges and faces up to 50 years in prison and fines of $250,000. Kimberly Ash Peterson, former Troy City Council member, also pleaded guilty and is facing up to 5 years in prison. Mary Sabo is a former city council member and 2023 candidate in East Greenbush.
So this is basically a broad-based conspiracy by those who are very high-level employees in county and operatives in the county government to commit fraud in the electoral process and to maintain power really at any and all costs. And we saw this in the 2001 election that I ran in, where in my small town of then 10,000 folks, the Republicans put up essentially fake candidates. People, in one case, one of the women did not even know she was running to run on the working families line in order to siphon votes away from Democrats. And failing to do that, they then turned to absentee ballot fraud.
So, like, the concrete thing that they did here is fill out fake absentee ballots in order to cast votes?
It is my understanding that they looked for voters, perhaps who were not active voters, and they requested absentee ballots in their name and then filled them out. And in some cases, these folks may have been county employees, so they pressured them to vote or to fill out absentee ballots.
Anita Thayer is on the executive committee of the New York Working Families Party and the former chair of the Capital District chapter. She explained to me how the Rensselaer County Republican Committee has been manipulating the working family ballot line in the past few elections and why it matters.
The Republican Party in Rensselaer County is desperate to hold on to power. And if they played by the rules, that probably would be a blue county because of changing demographics and changing attitudes of the residents of Rensselaer County. So they think that the only way they can retain power is by making sure they have access to a ballot line for additional votes, or they want to make sure the Democratic Party doesn't have the right to place any of its people on the Working Families Party line. So if you play by the rules, the way a candidate gets on the Working Families Party line is that you have an interview with local members of the Working Families Party, and they make a recommendation as to whether or not a particular candidate is aligned with the values of the Working Families Party. They make a recommendation that eventually it's the executive committee, the officers committee of the Working Families Party, that gives them, if they're registered to a different party, permission to run and appear on the Working Families Party line. Historically, it was easier for candidates that were not aligned with us to use the New York State election law to petition to be on the Working Families Party line. But recently, the law has changed, so if you don't get permission from the Working Families Party, you have to be a registrant of the Working Families Party. So what happened 2 years ago is that the Rensselaer County Republican Party decided they're going to register a lot of their people in the Working Families Party, run candidates in our party, and then try to block the candidates that we chose to appear on our line. You don't need to show that you're committed to our values or our principles or our program of action. And you can, you know, without really sharing our ideals, you can get yourself on the ballot line.
They were putting people on the line that really weren't running much of a campaign. So the point was more to confuse voters that would be voting against them than it was to gain votes for their candidates, right?
It was to keep the Democrats from winning, because in many cases we chose to endorse Democratic candidates because they shared our values, and that would have given them an opportunity to, you know, present themselves as a Democratic and Working Families Party candidate, and they wanted to block that. And in a county like Rensselaer County, where the registration between Republicans and Democrats is closely divided, it makes a difference for a candidate if you can appear on a third party line.
And that's, I guess that's the answer similarly to, like, it could make a difference if you could submit enough, fake absentee ballots as well, huh?
Right. I mean, if they played by the rules, the Republican parties wouldn't hold power in Rensselaer County. They chose to resort to intimidation and badgering. Folks that work for Rensselaer County are threatened with a job loss, you know, either explicitly or implicitly. They're threatened with losing some status if they don't cooperate with these schemes of the Republican Party. This is a problem. You know, there's many reasons people become cynical and choose not to engage in the voting process, but it doesn't help when you have the leadership of the major party, you know, as alleged by the feds here, committing crimes of intimidation.
In 2021, Democrat Cheryl Kennedy lost the general election in the Troy City Council's 6th District by 10 votes to Republican Irene Sorrento. Election officials say that James Schofield personally processed about 12 absentee ballots in that race. Mary Sabo explains why she thinks this case is so important for Rensselaer County voters.
But I think it definitely affects everyone in the county because Rensselaer County voters are entitled to fair and free elections. And if we can't have faith in the electoral process, then how can we have faith that the county government, in fact, is operating above board in other areas? If they're willing to lie about absentee ballots, then maybe they're lying about being bribed for contracts. We just will never know. And the other thing that's perfectly really disturbing is that we may never know who won the elections in 2021. It is kind of funny that a lot of Republicans are always accusing Democrats of fraud and looking back at the 2020 presidential election and questioning the results there. But here in Rensselaer County, I may be one of the few candidates whose election was actually affected by voter fraud because we have these operatives and these county employees who've been arrested for very serious crimes.
What would you like to see happen going forward?
I'd like to just see the judicial process play out, and I hope that we will learn more about what happens as time goes on.
When's the election day for you for city council?
It will be, well, so I was endorsed by the Democrat. I am a Democrat, and I also have the Working Families Party endorsement. And perhaps due to this ongoing investigation this year, they did not try to run a fake candidate in a primary against me. So I'll be facing the voters on November 7th in the fall.
The Rensselaer County GOP and the North Greenbush Republican Committee both declined to comment for this story. Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Polar Bear took their experimental jazz to a new level of intensity on their album In Each and Every One. And we'll hear a track on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Clay Rendering, Machine Woman, and Hoshka. Deep Threes. Music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM. Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer fronts the Capital Region-based band Sky Pharaohs, and here is their 2023 new song. It's a cover of The Cleans' Point That Thing Somewhere Else from the Dot Dash Mixtape Volume 1. Here is Sky Pharaohs.
Baby, when you say you want me, I'm fading, no, it's not.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a 3-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many 3-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a 3-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the Hudson Police Department says they have an officer who lied in an incident report, drove with a suspended registration, and repeatedly left his post as a school resource officer at the Hudson Junior Senior High School to visit a woman in another county with whom he had an intimate relationship. That's all the internal affairs documents obtained by the Times Union say about Officer Jacob Hoffman. He was also found to have stashed 4 personal guns, including a loaded semi-automatic handgun and an unregistered pistol, in an unlocked locker in the vacant former Hudson police station. Currently, Hoffman is not on active duty because of an injury and has been disciplined multiple times in a few years. But a settlement agreement negotiated between the department and his police union that extends to 2024 allows police to terminate him immediately if he violates department policy. Hoffman could not be reached for comment. The Times Union obtained the police records through the state's Freedom of Information Law. In the documents, Hoffman admits to leaving his post as a school resource officer to meet the woman. Police learned of the incident because the woman's husband witnessed the visit and called them. According to the internal investigation, and I quote, Hoffman stated that he has been doing this once a week for a couple of months, with some weeks going twice, end quote. After the internal investigation, Hoffman was suspended without pay for 14 days for violating 10 departmental policies and received a letter of reprimand, but he is still on the Hudson Police Force. The story outlines other violations and transgressions of the police officer. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that Second Ward Hudson Supervisor Abdus Maya wants another term. Maya is running on the Democrat Party line. Maya has previously been a Hudson alderperson and said, and I quote, I encourage affordable housing and shelter arrangements for homeless people in the Galvin Civic Motel and work through a range of support services, including eviction prevention, emergency services, and transitional housing. I supported the satellite service at Bliss Towers to bring the Department of Social Services, Public Health, Human Services, and Office of the Aging, end quote. The story does not say if there are other candidates running for the same position. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Soup that Facebook deleted the pages of the Greene County Sheriff's Office and American Legion Post 291 of Greenville this week, and some local folks are upset. Facebook is a private company, and when anyone posts anything there, they are turning over the information and contents to a giant corporation, which can do what they want with it. Michelle Dale, Greene County's Veteran Service Agency Director and Administrator of the American Legion Post 291's social media page, said someone apparently reported the Legion's account for violating what Facebook calls, and I quote, account integrity and authentic identity, end quote. Greene County Undersheriff Adam Bernard said they, and I quote, are currently appealing the removal based on what they can see. We have no violations, end quote. Facebook did not respond to questions from the newspaper. And you can read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
for the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. A bipartisan effort in Congress may fix unintended consequences of a 2020 law that was meant to simplify college financial aid. Congress eliminated a long-standing exemption for farm families whose land holdings don't represent their regular income. Without a fix, the change could increase farm kids' tuition fivefold. Journalist Nick Ferrizos writes for Open Campus.
If you had a family farm, you didn't have to calculate the net worth of the farm because a family farm isn't something you can just piece up and sell when it's time to go to college. Maybe if it was a stock, you could sell it, but you can't sell the auger that you're using to make a living as a family farm.
Overall, rural students graduate high school at similar rates to city kids, but they're less likely to complete a college degree, in part because of cost. Without revised legislation, Ferrizo says it could be out of reach for a whole